hurts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Yes, it is that time. When we welcome Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society to the program for his latest edition of Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
All right. Remind me what we're discussing this week.
Well, for many years, the Manitoba government has operated a bricks and mortar shop called Canada Map Sales. As the name suggests, it specialized in maps of every kind. Recently, however, the province announced that the shop will close at the end of March, arguing that most people now get their maps online, and therefore they no longer need the service that the shop provided. Even if that's true, I worry that the closure will have additional consequences, especially for people like me. And that's what we're talking about today.
What you mentioned, additional consequences, like what?
Well, the same office that sold maps also housed the Manitoba Air Photo Library. In its announcement of the closure of the store, the government said, and this is a quote, "Manitoba is taking steps to preserve important historical aerial photography resources. Updates on digitization and long-term preservation of these materials is forthcoming." Now, that statement raises more questions than I think it answers. What does important mean? I mean, are they preserving the entire collection or just selected images? And who decides what's important? When they say preserve, does it mean publicly accessible? In my view, these are not small details. They matter.
They would, definitely, to a history-minded fellow like yourself. So let's talk about history a little bit. How far back in time do the photos go that in that air photo library?
Well, the first comprehensive set of air photos of Manitoba was taken in 1923, essentially shortly after the First World War. And that's significant because, of course, after the war, there were many trained pilots who were looking for work. And so the federal government put them to work beginning aerial surveying. And in case of Manitoba, they were operating from a base at Victoria Beach. Now, at the Provincial Archives here in Winnipeg, there is an absolutely remarkable collection of 72 photos that were taken at that time, 1923, as an aircraft flew from the south end of Lake Winnipeg to the city here, following the Red River. And in among those 72 photos is a spectacular bird's eye view of the St. Andrews Lock and Dam. And it was just over a dozen years old at that time. And, you know, keep in mind that most people at that time had never seen a photo taken from the air. Today, of course, that's pretty commonplace, but not back then. These photos were more than novelties. They allow cartographers to map areas for which there had never been maps before. And in fact, two Canadian cartographers in Ottawa developed a method to take oblique photos, in other words, photos taken at an angle, and then turn them into vertical maps. So that was a major advance in map making. The next major advance with respect to air photos in Manitoba, well, that came in 1930.
What happened in 1930?
That was the year Manitoba gained control over its natural resources. Previous to that, the federal government had operated them, and now the province had control. And one of its first actions was to establish a surveys branch within its Department of Mines and Natural Resources. That branch began surveying the province's boundaries with adjoining provinces and territories. Aerial photos were essential to this work. Then, after the Second World War, well, there was another cohort of trained pilots. They came home, and in 1948, 1949, they began working on taking aerial photos, too. Now, the focus of that second big push of photography was northern Manitoba, and of course, they were mapping it for mine development and forestry development. But they were also photographing southern Manitoba, too, for things like agricultural development, well, and for the routing of things like hydro lines, telephone lines, and highways. In 1948, the province formally established the Air Photo Library, and its objective was to collect and preserve this growing archive, which already numbered about 65,000 images. Those late 1940s are incredibly useful today because they preserve information that can be found nowhere else.
What kind of information is that?
Well, I can think of at least three examples from my own work. Long-time listeners know that I'm passionate about Manitoba's disappearing grain elevators, right? Mm-hmm. Well, at one time, we had over 700 of them. Today, just over 100 remain, and the total drops every year. Many have been gone for decades, some even longer. Yet I want to preserve the knowledge of where every single one of those elevators once stood. How do you pinpoint the site of an elevator that vanished in the 1950s? Well, aerial photos from the 1950s will show you. And the same is true of my efforts to map more than 2,000 one-room schools that operated across Manitoba. Air photos from the late 1940s and early 1950s captured those sites while they were still common on the landscape. But perhaps my most important use of historical air photos was in a long-running study of the Netley-Lebo Marsh. That's a huge wetland where the Red River flows into Lake Winnipeg.
So what do the photos tell you about that marsh?
Well, the marsh has undergone drastic changes over the past century, and especially a steep decline in the cattails and the bulrushes that once filled it. Today, much of the marsh is just shallow, muddy water. It's not really what I would call a marsh. The plants are gone, and with them the habitat that those plants provided for things like birds and fish and other wildlife. We wanted to document this transformation, and we were able to do it using air photos starting in 1929 right up to the 1990s. One of my graduate students, Paige Cowell, analyzed these images and was able to determine, for example, when a channel known as the Netley Cut, which today redirects at least a third of the Red River's flow through the marsh, when it had opened. Without aerial photos, we would have known very little about the marsh's early condition. And in fact, in 2003, I purchased a special set of photos that provided even more unique information. These photos were taken with infrared film.
Oh, that means different kind of data.
That's absolutely right. Infrared film is sensitive to light that is beyond the spectrum visible to the human eye.
Right.
Different plant species reflect infrared light differently. So an infrared photo allows you to distinguish one plant from another. You can say, that's cattail over there, this is a bulrush over here, and so on. Well, from that, you can then create a vegetation map. Infrared air photos are rare, but, you know, there is a unique collection of them here in Manitoba at Carmen that was photographed by a man named Jack McKinnon. Jack believed that farmers could use infrared maps of their fields to identify weed patches and therefore to target pesticides much more precisely. In other words, to minimize the amount of pesticide they used by putting it exactly where it needed to go. Between 1988 and 2000, Jack photographed most of agricultural Manitoba. In other words, the part of the province that was being farmed. And he used infrared film. Today, that entire collection sits in a filing cabinet in Jack's garage. And this brings us back to that air photo library.
In his garage.
Yeah, his garage.
So how does that bring us back to the air photo library?
Well, Jack is now elderly, and he wants to find a permanent home for his collection. He doesn't want all that hard work to go for nothing. He offered it to the air photo library, but they refused it. With the future of the library now uncertain, you know, I worry that things like the McKinnon collection, and who knows, there may be other such collections out there, you know, which document the prairie vegetation in the 1990s and other times. Well, that would be a useful comparison with today's satellite imagery, but it may end up in a dumpster for lack of vision.
And we know that that's one of your nightmares, that things end up in dumpsters that shouldn't be tossed out, right?
Absolutely.
So coming back to the air photo library then, how many photos are in it?
Well, I'm not sure anyone knows the exact number. I found a 1986 report in the library, and it put the total at 700,000 photos at that time, 1986. 1980 report, an earlier report, though, estimated more than 1 million. You know, either way, it is a vast collection. You know, the natural place for it, therefore, would, in my view, be the provincial archives. You know, but that facility, it's already facing a severe space crunch. So I'm worried that the collection could be moved to something like a dormant records warehouse, where it would be much less accessible than it is today. And I'd like to see these unique photo collections, ones like Jack McKinnon's, find a permanent home there too, at the Provincial Archives.
So how can regular people, like maybe even people listening to this, how can they help?
Well, I encourage anyone who is troubled by this uncertain future of the Air Photo Library to write to the minister responsible for it. That's the Minister of Environment and Climate Change, the Honorable Mike Moyes. You can reach him by email at minecc@manitoba.ca. Ask Mr. Moyes to clarify two things. First, where will the hundreds of thousands of photos in that collection be preserved? And two, how will they be made accessible to historians and scientists who may need to use them for their work? And, you know, I'm inclined to believe that the more letters and emails that the minister receives, the more seriously I expect he'll take these concerns. So again, email at minecc@manitoba.ca.
That's for Minister of Environment and Climate Change. So minecc@manitoba.ca. Well, thanks for this, Gordon. That's a lot of great information.
Well, and I hope people get worried about it as I am, because, say, it is an important, important collection that needs to be preserved.
Agreed. What's up for next week?
Well, as we've been doing for several years now, next week I'm going to look back at some of the noteworthy Manitobans who passed away in 2025.
Yes. All right. We will meet back here next week.
Sounds good. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.